And welcome to Resting Witch Face, your one-stop haunt for all things spooky, bitchy, and dying of heatstroke.
Oh yes.
My name is, I'm formerly known as Grant Jacoby.
And I'm Bailey Bennett. And yes, Grant is moist with the heat of a thousand suns, but we're here for you.
Yeah.
How many episodes now have we talked about how hot we are? Is it as fun for you guys as for us?
It's not fun for us. Well, I think it's come kind of full circle because I've already talked about this, but I'm going to say it again, that when we first recorded this podcast last, was it September when we started recording it?
Like end of September or October.
It was just as hot.
Yeah.
She probably wasn't, but.
The memories, though.
Yeah. Thanks for the memes.
Yeah. I just wanted to let you know, I've been feeling really great lately because within the past few like days or weeks, I've begun to embrace my identity as a plant mom.
Okay.
Can you relate?
No, but please go on.
Okay, great. I feel like for my whole life, I've just really enjoyed the presence of plants in a room, but I just didn't believe that I could care for them.
Okay.
You know, because I'm not that caring of a person. I feel like you can relate. Just joking. But recently I was like, you know what? I can fucking do this. And now I just keep buying plants. Like every time I go out, I keep buying plants. And currently, as you can see, I'm surrounded by three of them.
I can see.
And I just want to walk you through them because...
Okay. Do they have names?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, the theme of our naming convention at this point is that all of our plants are named after characters from The Office.
I mean,
obviously.
I mean.
Yeah. Okay. So the original, which is behind me to my right, for those of you who know what this is, it's a lovely rubber plant that
is lovely.
We bought it about 3 years ago and honestly, it's thriving. Oh. I'm shocked. But this is like our original baby and that's Dwight K. Root.
Oh my God.
Which he really started it all.
Canceled.
So Dwight is very happy on his window perch. But then very recently, we also got this snake plant, which is this first spiky one here. Mm-hmm. That's Angela, of course, because we needed to have the pair. And
yeah, why aren't they next to each other?
Well, we're moving, so the plants are going to get new homes. But it's just like, the spikiness just really goes with Angela's personality. And then most recently, literally yesterday, we got that fiddle leaf fig that I'm so excited about. And its name, of course, is Pee Pee Halpert. So...
PB?
Peepa.
Oh, right.
Their child, of course.
Okay, of course.
Yeah, so I wanted to share that with you because it's been a real journey and I just feel like my children are safe and thriving and it's...
Yeah, well, I'm glad that there are some living organisms in this apartment that are really benefiting from the sun. Meanwhile, I am slowly decomposing from the outside in, starting with my sweat glands that are working... Over time.
I mean, I can't describe how moist you look, but honestly, it's lovely. It's like, you can just tell how alive you are.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like I just either stepped out of the shower or came back from a run.
Which we know you didn't
but
do.
But no, didn't do either. I literally just walked from the G train.
Cool, cool, cool.
Cool, 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 cool.
Do we want to talk about anything like spooky or what? Like with this podcast or? Oh, he's leaving.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Oh, I know what I want to talk about. Did you see the trailer for the Lizzie Borden movie starring Chloe Sevigny?
Oh my God,
and
no.
Kristen Stewart. That's coming out.
Oh.
Well, if you are like Bailey and you have not checked it out, I highly recommend it. It looks so good. It stars Chloe Sevigny. I think that's how you say her name.
I think you're doing it.
As
doing a great job.
As Lizzie Borden, and Kristen Stewart plays their like fresh off the boat. Is that a bad expression?
Can I say that? There is that show called Fresh Off the Boat, but I feel like they're really like leaning into the stereotype.
Well, I'm thinking like she's like a true, like she's thinking she's an Irish immigrant. It's like the maid that works in the Borden house in Fall River.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is she like...
Please tell us if I'm being racist.
I think you're fine. as a white person, I think you're fine.
And she's white. Yeah. So it's, you can't be racist against a white person if you're white.
All of this is bad. Okay. So wait, so who, Lizzie Borden is the murderer. So that's Chloe.
Yes.
Okay. But I don't even remember there being like a maid character. Is that kind of made for the movie?
Well, there always is the maid character because she's the one who found the bodies. But this movie seems to put on a little bit of a lesbian twist in that Lizzie and this maid were having an affair.
Oh, thank God. And wait, like, no, I think that was real. I heard, like, I feel like I've read about that.
Well, Lizzie Borden and her sister were lived in the house with the father and the stepmother, who were the two victims of the murders. And I think there have always been... It was a very different time, but like the Borden sisters were in their late 30s and they were single, and they like, I think it was maybe like common at the time, if you were just kind of like considered an old maid, you just like lived with your parents.
But yeah,
like, there was something weird going on in that house, no matter what.
Okay, well, you know, I love a lesbian twist no matter the circumstances.
Yeah. And so it's not a spoiler because it's in the trailer.
Great.
Unless like, so now that we've acknowledged that my whole family listens to this podcast. I'm not going to edit myself, but, hi,
welcome.
My mother in particular, she really can't stand movie spoilers or spoilers in anything, but it's the kind of thing where like, you'd be like, oh, like, have you seen the trailer for the new Lizzie Borden movie? It starts. She's like, no, just don't tell me anything. I'm like, no, but like, I'm just telling you, no, don't tell me.
Oh, wow. She's going to be pissed.
It's like, well, it's called, now I know that it's about Lizzie Borden. It's called Lizzie. Fun fact. So check out Lizzie movie, whatever it's called. It's called Lizzie.
Thank you. I will. Speaking of women.
Yeah.
You want to talk about some badass bitches?
I would love to. So.
Well, I should go first.
You're right.
Because then I'm going to tell the story. That's how we do it here. We just really love taking turns. We love sharing. We love each other. We're holding hands right now.
Yeah.
Just kidding. We would never touch each other.
No. It's too hot. Too hot to touch.
Yes. Okay. So I want to talk about a real, real badass bitch that it's, I feel like I'm a little bit late to the game with this, but to be fair, I want to talk about Hannah Gadsby.
Who?
Do you know who this is?
No. Okay.
So I watched her special weeks ago. Oh, I just forgot to bring it up on this podcast. Okay. So Hannah Gadsby is this incredible comedian who has a new special out on Netflix called Nanette. Mm-hmm. And it's, I wouldn't even really call it a comedy special because it turns into more of just like a motivational speech, like not even motivational. It's actually very tragic and so sad to watch, but it's one of the most incredible things I've seen in a long time. And she's been getting so much respect for this. And I think so many people are discovering her for the first time and just being like, who is this woman? And like, why did I not know about her? But yes, she is a lesbian, and she kind of starts off the special in telling a lot of jokes about her sexuality and like what it's been like growing up and things like that. And then kind of halfway through, she starts this bit, if you could even call it that, about how she needs to quit comedy because she can't be funny about it anymore. And she can't like tell these jokes anymore because it has completely like broken her, and everything about her personality and everything about her identity has been just like shattered by how she's been treated all of her life. And she can't like continue to make fun of herself for it and be like self-deprecating about it. And she just starts talking about it in the most real way. And I was just like weeping. It's, if you haven't seen it, I so highly recommend that you watch it. I obviously can't relate to a lot of her struggles being a straight woman, but a lot of what she talks about, she says basically there's nothing stronger than a woman who has been broken and rebuilds herself. And I couldn't relate to that more. And I just like, it's so good. So please go watch that and support her.
I will. It's on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. Yeah. That will need to be watched like ASAP.
Yeah.
My badass bitch of the week is also kind of in the popular culture realm, shocking. Mm-hmm. Have you been watching Sharp Objects on HBO?
Okay, I haven't watched it yet, but I'm like primed to do it.
So is a new limited series on HBO based on the book of the same name by Gillian Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great book. Highly recommend it. She also wrote Gone Girl.
Yeah.
So it stars Amy Adams, Patricia Clarkson, and Eliza Scanlon as the three female leads. Mm-hmm.
And it's directed by the same person who did Big Little Lies,
yes,
I think.
Who's... name is
it's a man, Jean-Marc Vallée, whatever.
But he's an incredible director,
he's doing
and
great.
It was created by Marty Noxon. who we've talked about before.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
So the story is, I think, would be very applicable to this podcast. It's about this woman named Camille Prieger, and she's a reporter in, I think, Kansas City and whatever, some city. She returns mm-hmm. to her hometown mm-hmm. to investigate these series of child murders that have taken place in the town. And that's kind of the backdrop, but also she's a very complicated character. This she's played by Amy Adams. And I'm not going to give too much away, but
you're welcome, Mom.
Actually,
I really got you.
No, it's ironic because this is won't be a spoiler because she like recently read this book aloud to my father.
Oh,
and they've been watching it.
Is that something they do?
I don't know.
Okay.
They're empty nesters. Cute. Little cute things. They got a dog and read aloud to each other, I guess.
Goals.
Seriously. But just this like trio of female leads, again, Patricia Clarkson and Amy Adams, who have always been like true tour de forces. And this newcomer named Eliza Scanlon, who plays the half-sister of Amy Adams and the daughter of Patricia Clarkson, who's the mom. And they're all just like, it's some like really, really beautiful, like nuanced work where it's like, mm-hmm. like there's some, cause the series kind of like peels back the different layers with each episode. It's kind of a slow burn, which, you know, we love over here at mm-hmm. RWF podcast. Mm-hmm. And, but it's just like really, it's just like, you know, it's like watching just masters at their craft do their work. And,
amazing. Have you watched the whole thing already?
There have been 4 out of 8 episodes have aired.
Oh,
so okay. 4 or 5.
Okay.
So, and they're on Sundays on HBO. And yeah, if you want some like spooky hometown murder town atmosphere, plus like Amy Adams in a full like Connie Britton hair fantasy.
I love her. Like, I do want that. I want
like her like driving
that.
Around binge drinking and listening to Led Zeppelin. Great. And like cutting herself and like having some really awesome like breakdown scenes. It's
cool.
Really terrific.
I'm absolutely going to watch it. You don't need to convince me, but all of y'all should do the same.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Well,
that's just, you're telling the story this week.
I'm telling the story this week.
I don't know. Do I know what you're doing?
Yeah. You told me to do it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. I was. Well, so we're at a point right now. Or, well, I mean, as I think would be with any podcast, when you are covering a certain topic, where you get to a certain point where you don't run out of ideas, but you get to certain, you hit some roadblocks.
Yeah. And it's hard because I feel like so many stories have been done. It's like, you're never going to find something like this that hasn't been told before.
And also we try to shake up the content for you guys. Mm-hmm. So that we try to do some supernatural, some unsolved mysteries, some kidnapping, some murders.
We love the paranormal shit so much, obviously, but I think a lot of times we default to like the mystery and murder stuff just because it's a lot easier to talk about because there are facts. Like this is what actually happened. Whereas a lot of times with the paranormal stuff, it's just like gathering what people have said and what mm-hmm. they've seen and things like that. However, today we are venturing back there. I'm going to talk about the Whaley House, which was Grant's suggestion to me.
After I started researching and then was like, this is too complicated. Bailey, how about you do this instead this week?
It's really not that complicated, right. I have to say.
Well,
but,
I was lazy.
It's fun. So the Whaley House is known by like a lot of publications as the most haunted house in America, allegedly.
Ooh. Wow.
So I used, obviously, information from Wikipedia, but
what?
Also, what's Get that? But also a story on the lineup called The Whaley House, The Most Haunted House in America by Orrin Gray, and from a site called ghostsandgravestones.com, which is also called The Most Haunted House in America. So again, it's considered to be the most haunted house in America.
But like, where would that fall? Like the most?
I feel like in comparison to something like the Amityville house, it doesn't seem as bad, but also it seems like a lot of the shit from that house was fake. So this one's.
Go listen to our episode on the Amityville horror.
Go listen to that. Okay. So.
Especially because I tell it.
Congratulations. Now I'm going to tell this one. Sorry. Okay. So the Whaley House, it's located at 2476 San Diego Avenue in Old Town San Diego. And it is a stately two-story brick house built in the style of mid-19th century Greek Revival architecture. For those of you who don't know what that means, I don't either.
It's also, sorry, this is your story, but I'm just going to...
It's fine.
I think you would agree that from the exterior, this it is not a creepy looking house.
It is not at all. It's like a really nice looking like brick colonial kind of like dream home.
But also with like this like little like split level offshoot.
Yeah.
Like mobile home. Yeah. Not mobile home, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it looks just like a mobile home made of brick. Okay. So the house was built by Thomas Whaley himself in the mid 1850s with his family moving into the home in 1857. And it was actually the first two-story brick building in all of San Diego. So amazing. Can you believe it?
Yes.
Yeah, same. I really can.
Were there a lot of one-story brick buildings?
I mean, I guess. I guess like it three? Must have been radical for someone to be like,
I really want upstairs.
Let's just keep putting bricks on top of bricks until there's another floor. Cool. Now, before I get into more about the house, I'll tell you a little bit more about the family. So Thomas Whaley was born on October 5th, 1823, New York City. Hey.
Hi.
That's actually where we are. So. Amazing. He was the seventh child in a family of 10, which is too many kids. I then love how Wikipedia describes his like early life, because they say Whaley took over his father's successful business relations, then left New York on January 1st, 1849. He traveled to San Francisco during the California Gold Rush, where he engaged in business.
Mm.
So just like a lot of business was going on.
Yeah, a lot of business engagements.
Yes. I can't tell you what kind of business, but I know like business was for sure happening.
Drugs?
Probably. Gold. Yeah. All of the above. I can't offer any further details. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I hope it was meth.
Me too. Don't do meth. He then went to San Diego in September of 1851. 2 years later, Whaley went back to New York and he married Anna Eloise Delaney on August 14th, 1853. Together, it's almost their wedding anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary. Was it Thomas?
Thomas and Anna.
Guys. I was supposed to say Eloise.
It was Anna Eloise.
Okay, so you just...
Okay. Thanks for listening to me.
Did she move to the palace?
Well, I'm going to tell you. Okay. The plaza, you mean?
Fuck.
Wow. If you could just shut up, because you're making no sense. Great. So together, they returned to California, arriving in San Diego on December 7th, 1853. This is when Thomas built the two-story brick house aforementioned for them to live in. And on August 22nd, 1857, the Whaleys moved into their new home, now known as the Whaley House. A few months later, they would also open a general store within the residence. They're just like really crafty.
Business.
More business. You're so right. Okay. So Thomas and Anna Whaley had six children. Francis Hinton, born December 28th, 1854. Thomas Whaley Jr., born August 18th, 1856. Anna Amelia, born June 27th, 1858. George Hay Ringgold, born November 5th, 1860. Why am I telling you this? I'm just going to keep going. Violet Eloise, born October 14th, 1862. And Corinne Lillian, born September 4th, 1864. That's close to my birthday.
Their middle names are especially important, right?
Very important. Very important. Capture. Please memorize them all now.
Especially the one that, Ringworm?
Ringo
Starr.
Ringo Starr was his
And this is the
name.
Story of the Beatles.
Exactly. This is hilarious. Francis Hinton was named after a business partner. Of course, because this family is all about business. They were like, where are we going to get our children's names? We just look to the business. Great. Unfortunately, Thomas may not have chosen the most ideal location to build his new family home. So the ground the Whaley House was built on was previously used as a makeshift gallows location. Yeah. So in 1852, James, aka Yankee Jim Robinson, was convicted of attempted larceny, which is like he didn't even complete it, but he was still hanged, I guess. So like it was hard times. Attempted larceny, and he was hanged in the back of a wagon over the spot where the house would later stand. Yikes. According to newspaper accounts of the time, Yankee Jim kept his feet on the wagon as long as he could, and when he was finally pulled off, he swung back and forth like a pendulum until he was strangled to death. So that's fun. Even stranger, Thomas Whaley actually witnessed this execution. He was there.
Oh, no.
And he apparently decided that this spot would be a perfect place to raise his children. Like, I know that man is swinging like a pendulum, but just look at that view.
Like, just like just the way that the light is hitting that body, I feel like I could imagine a master bath.
Exactly.
Or maybe it was the gallows itself. He was like, oh my God, it goes all the way up. Two stories.
Wow. Okay. We're on it. We know. So
we're going so quickly to hell. Like straight into the
place. We have a VIP pass to hell. Yeah. So
it's fucking hot as hell in here.
It's yep.
Ayo.
Hell's going to be so sweaty. Okay. So he decides I need to buy this plot of land. Like this is lovely. So with these already cursed beginnings, the family moved into the home. Almost as soon as they did, strange occurrences started to happen. Can you believe it?
I'm shocked.
They say they began to hear heavy footsteps moving throughout the house, which Thomas Whaley said sounded like they were made by the boots of a large man. Eventually, the family concluded that these footsteps were the work of the ghost of Yankee Jim. Like, obviously.
Yeah.
Great work. However, this death and the ghost Jim left behind would be just the beginning of the tragedies that would occur at the Whaley house, thank God. So
that isn't the end of the story?
It's actually not. Oh. The Whaley's infant son, Thomas Whaley Jr., who I feel like I did not mention in the first...
You did.
I did? Okay.
He was the second born.
Okay, great. He actually died of scarlet fever in the house when he was only 18 months old on January 29th, 1858, which is only a few months after the family moved into the house. So it doesn't really bode well. It's very sad. But I think, I mean, I think this is something that happened kind of often in the 1850s, but nevertheless.
I feel like also in this time, people just kind of died. I was also thinking like...
Mothers in childbirth.
Or just like...
could I just let you finish?
You know, like in... what is that era called? Victorian? Whatever it was, I feel like in especially like a lot of like novels you read, people are like, and then their wrists were hurting and then they died.
Oh yeah, this and is like Jane Austen era, yeah, which is like, my favorite.
It's like there were too many pillows, so exactly. She just could not go on any longer.
It's exactly that.
And she died old age at 32.
Well, I honestly feel like that's why I found...
Yeah, that baby was like nearing old age anyways. So.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why they had like so many kids because they were like, we know they're not all going to make it. So we just need to like up our odds of having 3 kids at least.
Well, also did birth control exist? I bet they were using like a fucking like pillowcase or just like...
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Some, like soap on a rope. They're like, here we go.
Soap on a rope?
I didn't make that up.
Hi, Mom.
That's definitely a bad 30 Rock reference.
Okay, cool.
Probably miss...
Let's get back to this dead baby. So,
remember dead baby jokes?
Oh yeah.
I was just having this conversation with some friends of mine. Like I have this, sorry, this is obviously a segue.
It's fine.
I have this very vivid memory of being at summer camp. It was a day camp. And like the thing that we would do is at the end of the day, we'd like go home and we'd like look up jokes on like literally jokes.com and like bring them in and like see who could like find like the nastiest ones. And a lot of them were dead baby jokes.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that, but I can't really relate because the only summer camp I went to was an indoor piano camp.
As opposed to an outdoor piano camp.
Exactly. Well, actually, I remember being really jealous of the kids who played violin because they would like sit in trees outside, like playing their violin, like practicing their music, where I just had to be in these like dark basements playing the piano all the time. Mm-hmm. I wish this were a joke, but I really did this. For multiple summers. Let's move on.
So you don't want to hear some dead baby jokes.
Do you have one prepared?
Yeah. What's worse than a dead baby nailed to a tree?
Oh, I know this one, but I don't. 2 dead babies?
A dead baby nailed to 10 trees.
Ah!
Ugh, bye.
It's not
all
good.
Right.
It's not great.
It's not good. I don't know why they're funny. And they're not.
They're not really.
They're not funny.
Yeah.
Anyways, send your kids to summer camp. Don't let them use the internet.
Send your kids to piano camp. Okay.
I'm also just imagining you in like a full like floor length gown and like opera gloves.
I did
gloves.
That a lot, yeah. Oh. Not gloves. Floor length gowns.
Just like playing some like fucking, like the Turkish march.
And there was a lot of Beethoven, Mozart, Chopin. Nice.
I love Chopin. All right.
Okay. Only a few months after that baby died, a fire started within the home that ended up destroying the general store that was inside. So that also really sucks for these people.
Bad for business.
Yeah, bad for... And you know how much they love business. This really hit them hard.
Fucking hard on for business.
Exactly. So after so much tragedy, Thomas and the family decided that they wanted to move to San Francisco to get a fresh start. So in January of 1859, Thomas turned over his business affairs in Old Town San Diego to a Wells Fargo agent named Frank Ames, and they left town. He gave up that business for his family. Can you believe it? Okay. However,
business was his mistress.
Never fear, because almost 10 years later, in the summer of 1868, Thomas and the family decided to move back to San Diego and back to the Whaley House, because there were just like these really fond memories that they had there. And they were like, we really miss the time of our lives when like our babies were dying and our house was on fire. So let's move back to that same house. And that's just what they did. So Thomas fixed up the old Whaley House, and Anna and the five remaining children arrived back home to San Diego on December 12th, 1868. Once the family had returned, the Whaley House was soon bustling with activity again. It became the headquarters for the city courthouse, San Diego's first theater troupe, and was turned back into a general store. Don't worry, I'll tell you all about it. In October 1868, an upstairs family bedroom was converted into a theater after Thomas Whaley decided to rent out the room to the Tanner Troupe, a local theater group traveling through San Diego at the time. Just because, like, why not? Let's just turn our master bedroom into a stage. So for the troupe's opening night performance, the small room accommodated a stage, a few benches, and shockingly 150 guests.
Wow. That's
yeah.
A big master bedroom.
I know. Although it was mostly standing room only, and importantly, ladies were advised not to wear their hoop skirts or petticoats that evening to allow for more room.
So what would they wear? Just like their bloomers?
Oh my God. They had to wear their dresses without the full hoop. Can you imagine? They must have looked horrible.
Must have been like a lot easier to sit down though.
I mean, no one wants to see their natural bodies. Please.
Gross.
Get out that corset. Anyway.
Cinch that waist, honey.
However, because this house is apparently fucking cursed, the operator of the theater, Thomas Tanner, died 17 days after opening night, and his troupe had disbanded by the end of January 1869. So, should have found a different theater, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe like a theater.
Like not...
Not someone's home.
Yeah, like I've heard of dinner theater, but mm-hmm. not bedroom theater.
I know you've heard of it. In fact, you've more than heard of it.
Yes, I am a former, I was going to say patron, of when would we say live?
Performer?
Yeah, I performed in a dinner theater.
And it was lovely. I never saw it, but I could tell from afar.
Yeah, that's a story for another day.
Okay.
Only fond memories.
Another day, another destiny.
Oh, you got me.
Goodbye. By 1870, however, the town began to change, with many local merchants moving from the old part of town to the new part of town, which they called, shockingly, New Town. This caused Old Town, where the Whaley House was situated, to become largely abandoned and quiet, which just really adds to the whole vibe of this clearly haunted house that they were now living in, like, the abandoned part of town. But, of course, Thomas Whaley was like, I'm not ready to give up on this beautiful home where everyone keeps dying, so we're going to keep living here. So in 1871, when Thomas was away on a business trip, a group of armed men held his wife Anna at gunpoint, and they seized the courthouse records from the home because people were pissed that the courthouse was still situated in this like old abandoned house and they wanted to move it to Newtown. So that's like another great sign for this family in this home. And many people say that this was the incident that was kind of the turning point for the family and the house. So I am sorry this is like so much of a history lesson.
No, I'm
great. You're enthralled? Great.
Yes.
So now this part is pretty sad. So on January 5th, 1882, two of the daughters, Violet Eloise Whaley and Anna Amelia Whaley, were both married in Old San Diego. Violet married George T. Bertolacci, and Anna Amelia wed her first cousin, John T. Whaley. So just like a classic love story for the ages.
Like,
you know.
It's a love story. Mm-hmm. Cousin, just say yes.
So, actually that marriage turned out fine.
You know what they say, incest is best.
Yep. So, unfortunately, just 2 weeks into Violet's marriage, who was the other sister.
Did she turn into a blueberry?
Nice. You know, he like shot up from his seated position to interject that. I just want you guys to know. No, that's not what fucking happened. Instead, when the couple was traveling back east on their honeymoon, Violet woke up one morning to find that her husband was gone. Her husband, Bertolacci, as it turned out, was a con artist, and as Violet and her family later learned, had only married her for the substantial dowry he believed he would collect upon marrying her.
Oh, no.
I know. So, unfortunately, because of fucking archaic societal standards of morality at the time, Violet was literally shunned by society upon returning home without a man and without an escort to safely bring her home, because we all know that a woman can't just, like, possibly travel by herself without a proper chaperone who's a male.
No.
Of course. So, understandably, she's, you know, shunned by society. Violet and George's divorce was finalized approximately a year later, but Violet never recovered from the public humiliation and the betrayal. And she then began to suffer from a deep depression, understandably, because she was basically being blamed for the fact that her husband was a con artist who never loved her. So it's just, like, really cute. Love the 1850s, 1860s. Unfortunately, it's the 1880s. Wow, nothing's changed. Okay. Unfortunately, Violet ended up committing suicide by shooting herself in the chest with Thomas's 32 caliber on August 18th, 1885.
That's very, like,
I know, she was
unfortunately specific way to go.
I know, she was 22.
Oh
yeah, baby. Her suicide note read, "Mad from life's history, swift to death's mystery, glad to be hurried anywhere, anywhere out of this world." It's a passage from a poem called "The Bridge of Sighs" by Thomas Hood.
I was about to say, did people just talk like that back then, or like just like spoke in like iambic pentameter?
Not exactly, but I still think I just think it's, I hate that, it's so sad.
Yeah, that's tragic. And
fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck him.
And everyone who just like.
Yeah, fuck everyone else. Fuck the 1800s.
Poor women. Yeah, I think. Fortunately, I do think if that were to happen today, that's probably not what would happen to the woman.
No.
So,
and she'd be allowed to travel alone. Do you travel alone?
No, never. Okay. I need a chaperone. Okay, so.
That's actually the only reason I'm the co-host of this podcast.
Even when I go to the grocery store, Grant holds my hand the whole way. So, unfortunately, because everyone who was alive during this time period fucking sucks, her sister, Corinne Lillian, was engaged at the time of her sister's death, but her fiancé decided to break off the engagement due to the scandal that the suicide had raised.
Men are true trash.
Like, cool, 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 cool. Love that. After all of this happened, Thomas Whaley decided to build a single-story frame home for his family at 933 State Street in downtown San Diego, and the family moved into the new residence, leaving the Whaley house vacant for over two decades.
Oh.
On December 14th, 1890, Thomas Whaley died due to ill health at the State Street address. Meanwhile, the old Whaley house remained vacant and fell into disrepair. But in late 1909, Francis Whaley, who was one of the sons, undertook the restoration of the building because they just can't fucking get over this house, which is clearly their death toll.
I'm wondering if they had like a lot of money tied up in the house, and because like you said, like people had moved to a different part of town, so like
I guess
it kind of turned into kind of this like money pit. I can't really think of any other reason why you would just like sell the damn thing.
Well, actually, so Francis undertook the restoration of the building, and he actually turned the home into a tourist attraction time, which is like, what is a tourist attraction about this? Like a family lived there? Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's some history associated with it, but
not good history.
No. So he posted signs promoting its historic significance and entertained visitors with his guitar. Which I just really love.
I hope it was in the bedroom like, theater.
Me too. Anyway, here's Wonderwall. Anna Whaley, who was Thomas's widow, Corinne Lillian, Francis, and George all lived in the old Whaley house in 1912. On February 24th, 1913, Anna, who was the mother, died at 80 years of age, which is pretty old for that time.
Shit, yeah, damn.
Good for you, girl. A year later, Francis Whaley, who was the son, died on November 19th, 1914. George Whaley died on January 5th, 1928 in San Diego, and Corinne Lillian continued her residency in the house until her death in 1953.
So basically they all just like kept dying in that house.
Yep.
Great.
So clearly after a history of so many deaths in the house, the Whaley house remains well known as a haunted residence. It is said that guests and the staff from time to time will catch a glimpse of a ghost of one of the family members who died inside the house, such as baby Thomas, Violet, Anna, Francis, George, Corinne, and the like. Just take your pick.
Yeah, literally, that's like rolling a dice. And it's like, what ghost would you like to see today?
Exactly. Except if we had one of those dice, can you imagine?
I want to see the baby.
I do too. I would love to see a ghost baby. So indeed, over the years, plenty of visitors to the house have encountered ghostly phenomena within the residence. During its restoration periods, which took place several different times throughout the home's history, workers and visitors began to notice strange and mysterious sounds, sights, and aromas, which just love like a mysterious aroma. Baby Thomas clearly seemed to have stayed around, with people saying they could hear tiny footsteps, which, like, he was 18 months old. I don't think he's walking anywhere.
No, it might be like hand and knee steps.
Yeah, exactly. Crawling. But they say that they also have heard sounds of him crying and even giggling when there's no one in sight. Ugh. I don't like a baby giggle.
Yeah, maybe I should take it back that I want to see the dead baby.
Yeah. Thomas Whaley's ghost is often seen, especially on the upper landing of the house, because you know how much he loved that second story.
Yeah, he just was really proud of
that
business innovation.
Other encounters include his wife, Anna Whaley, in the downstairs rooms or garden, because, like, she's not impressed by the fucking second floor. Don't even. And even the Whaley's dog, Dolly, joins in on the fun, with one parapsychologist claiming to have seen a dog running down the hall into the dining room, while another visitor felt something brush against his leg. Others report seeing a young woman lingering on the second floor of the house, believed to be the daughter Violet, still consumed with sorrow and grief. She seems to stay close to the second floor because, I mean, again, innovation. And that is where she spent most of her time after her divorce, before she committed suicide, just kind of like locked away from the world, which is horrible.
Who committed suicide?
Violet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought there was a different one.
No. This is the ghost of Violet. It's also said that areas within the home become very cold and her presence is felt throughout. To this day, some people say they've seen a figure looking out of the upstairs window long after the house is closed for the day. Others have seen curtains moving, even though all of the windows are shut. There are sounds of children running up and down the stairs that can be heard without anyone being seen. Footsteps, cold spots, and the appearance and disappearance of shadows have all been seen, felt, and heard by guests. So just really anything and everything. Mists, lights turning on and off by themselves, and crystals in the music room's lamp swinging without anyone in there are other small signs of the family's continued presence. So the Whaley House and its hauntings have been featured on a variety of television series, such as some favorites like America's Most Haunted and Ghost Adventures, which are clearly shows I used to watch all the fucking time. And the list of people who claim to have witnessed the phenomena actually extends to celebrities as well.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So comedian Tom Green, who he was in Road Trip and Charlie's Angels, yes. And he was married to Drew Barrymore for a year, one whole year.
Wasn't he Freddie Got Fingered?
I don't know. I didn't recognize his name, but when I looked him up, I recognized his
face. He's like kind of unfortunate looking, right?
He's not like the hottest.
No. Yeah.
Piece I've ever seen. But he called out to the spirits in one room and was answered by a child's voice, which was apparently caught on tape. And we're going to have to look that up later.
Yeah.
Also, Regis Philbin visited the house and in 1964 and saw what he thought was the ghostly presence of Anna Whaley as a, quote, filmy white apparition that appeared in front of her own portrait. Regis later said, "You know, a lot of people poo-poo it because they can't see it, but there was something going on in that house." And like, I fucking believe you, Regis. You are the most trustworthy man in America. I don't care what you say. So yes, if you were worried that this story had not been made into a very mediocre horror movie, don't even fret, because we're on brand here, guys.
Nice.
In 2012, a low-budget independent film was made called The Haunting of Whaley House, with the tagline, "When a tour guide breaks into America's most haunted house, a bit of amateur ghost hunting with friends turns into more than they could have ever imagined."
Especially on that second floor.
Especially. Don't even get me started. They didn't even actually film it at the Whaley House because it wasn't big enough. And I do not recognize a single person in the cast. Like, I could not tell you who any of them are. But we definitely need to add it to our watch list. Apparently the budget was $115,000. So
real, you know, it's like
winner.
Real.
It's really good.
Real nice.
These days, the Whaley House has been made into a museum that offers plenty of historical information for believers and skeptics alike. It is a Save Our Heritage organization site, but the people who operate the house now definitely do not neglect its haunted history. They offer late night ghost hunting tours on the last weekend of every month, and extra tours are available around Halloween. Grant, I think you know what I'm going to say. We need to fucking go there.
Yeah, I mean, I've been meaning to get out to California, so count me in.
Great. There's so many haunted sites out there that we need to visit. I mean, we're staying a night on the Queen Mary for sure.
We're going
to the Winchester House. That's basically the whole story of the Whaley House.
Oh, I would like to point out that the director of The Haunting of Whaley House has also made such classic films as Song of the Vampire.
Ooh, a favorite.
Corpses Are Forever.
No.
The Haunting of Winchester House. So
okay, on brand.
And my personal favorite. Two personal favorites. Mm-hmm. I'm obviously reading this just for the first time right now. Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark.
Oh, okay, we're watching that.
And Hansel versus Gretel.
A twist. What a twist.
What an all of a twist.
Thank you. So yeah, it just sounds like a really fun like way to grow up for everyone involved.
Like, I feel like there were a lot of signs probably for that family to be like, maybe you should move.
And they did. They moved multiple times.
But they were like, might as well go back to the house where like everyone in our family's died.
Yeah. But you know what? When you love business, you don't really mix it with pleasure.
I'm sure also that there are like other homes are just like, oh, you know, I realize our old house, like that's where like truly where death lives, mm-hmm. but I just really miss that second floor.
I mean, the business
stairs. I'm so tired of only walking downstairs to a basement.
Exactly.
I want to go upstairs to a new floor.
And if you think about it, the business did take place on the second floor because that's where the theater troupe was.
But where was the general store?
I don't care. It was on the second floor in my mind. You come in and the downstairs is like where there's a living room and the dining room and the family are just living. And they're like, oh, you want to buy pickles? Go up those fucking stairs because look at this innovation.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Nice.
So
nice.
Before we go, I think we should have a bitch session. Our favorite part of the week. What grievances do you need to air, sir?
This one's just nice and petty. It's my complaint of the week. Is when businesses, when you're entering the business.
Uh-huh. A business. You're speaking my language.
I'm speaking the Whaley's language.
You are.
And there are two doors.
Yes.
One opens, the other one does not.
Yeah, like why not? Why?
And especially when like naturally, unless there's like a sign, like everyone goes through that wonderful little dance of like, is this a pull door? Is this a push door?
Oh yeah. And you look like a fucking idiot.
Yep. And it's especially good when it's like you go to push, doesn't open. You go to pull. It also doesn't open because that second door is fucking locked. Mm-hmm. And then you have to.
And then you all have to squeeze through like side of it.
And it goes from like a 5 second moment of embarrassment to like upwards of 15 to 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm. You know what's really annoying? This is so petty. You know, when there's two doors together, but then like further down, there's another door and it'll say, there'll be a sign on one of the doors in the two door scenario that says, please use other door.
Yep.
And you think, oh, I need to walk over there to that other single door. But they actually just mean the door directly next to this door. It's attached to the current door. That's not other door. That's please use this other half of this door. Wow. How do we live?
I don't know. I don't have the exact receipts to give it the credit it deserves, but there's this really funny tweet that I saw where it was like, I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of, I guess you studied abroad in the UK, but like Scottish or like Irish Twitter, where it's just like people like, it's just like so fucking funny.
Yeah. Just quaint.
Just very quaint. Just like the language that they use is so fucking funny. And so it was like talking about like when you like you're trying to do a pull door and it's actually push and someone's like, you have to push like when you're trying to pull. And this guy was like, oh, cheers, mate. I was going to try to lift it from the bottom next.
Oh, cheers, mate.
Anywho.
My complaint, I like this keeps happening where I'm like, did we already complain about this or did we just talk about it in our personal lives? I don't even care. I'm going to complain about it anyway.
Because also if it's that much of a complaint, like
it's
maybe
a big one.
It were,
I fucking hate.
Warrants being twice. Go.
Okay.
I got this out, apparently.
It's okay. I just really want to complain about gender reveal parties.
Oh.
Okay. Have we done this?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
I think I'm so sorry. Like, if you are pregnant, if you have had a gender reveal party, if you have children of your own, I'm...
Fuck you.
I'm so happy for you. Congratulations. That's so lovely. To each their own. But for me, I just don't fucking understand the point of having a party to reveal the gender of your child. Because to me, it just implies like one of them is better than the other. Like, are you not going to be excited no matter what your baby is? Like, I don't need people to come celebrate the fact that my baby's going to be a boy or that my baby's going to be a girl or that we need to like have these gender norms associated with them before they're even born anyway. It's like, oh, they're going to be a boy and now I'm just going to get blue things for the rest of the time that I'm pregnant and everyone's going to be so excited about the fact that this is the gender of my baby. And it's like, mm-hmm. Can we just be excited that you're having a health, like, that your baby's healthy? Like, healthy is my favorite kind of baby. I really don't care like what gender it is. It's going to be what it is when it comes out. And I don't have any problem with you like finding out the gender of your child and not whatever. But I saw this really funny tweet. I don't have the receipts either, but this tweet that was like a gender reveal party, but it's just you and your partner and the doctor and you ask him what the gender is and he tells you and then you leave.
I've seen that also.
I was like, yeah, that's my favorite party too.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like my issue with gender reveal parties is that it really just falls under like really stereotypical kind of traditional heteronormative viewpoints of, yeah, like what a marriage is, what the child should be. And sorry, it's too hot for me to formulate.
No, it's sentences. Okay.
But I was going to say, I also don't have the receipts for this, but I saw a funny tweet this morning that was like, it's like, don't judge me for having a gender reveal party. You know, if my child's gender changes later in life, we'll have one again, more parties for us, which I thought was like funny.
No, that's really cute. But I also do think like, yeah, it's another excuse to have a party where people are going to have to like spend their time coming to your house and like buy you gifts for no reason. And it's like, there's enough parties associated with having a baby and getting married and like whatever. I'm not about it.
But yeah,
like,
if you're
about it, celebrate the fact that you're having a child, of course. But like, I don't need, like, I really hate, like, let's cut into this cake and see what color's inside. Like, I fucking hate that. Anyway, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah. If you like what you've heard today, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. We are on iTunes. We are on
Stitcher.
And we are on SoundCloud.
Yes, we are.
We are also on Instagram and Twitter at RWF Podcast. And you can also send your thoughts, suggestions, and we especially really love hearing your own individual ghost stories or just spooky things that have happened to you. That could be ghosts or aliens or if you were possessed ever or maybe if you were like had a weird exchange with a stranger at a gas station. Like, please, we want to hear all of the above.
I want to hear about that.
You can send it to rwfpodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
And we'll miss you.
Yeah. Until next time.
Bye, bitches.